You keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall.
You're my private dancer, dancer for money.
Do what you want me to do. I'm your
private dancer,
dancer for money. And any old music will do.
8:02 on a Wednesday. Halford Brough, SportsCenter 650. You know what that music means, right? It's Thomas Drantz time. We're going to get to him in just 1 minute here. Before we do that, some bills to be paid. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dallari family of Acura dealers. They are the presenting sponsors, the official automotive sponsors of this show. The final hour of the program, which includes Thomas Drantz, what we learns, all that good stuff. Three locations to serve you better: North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. But that's not all. The final hour, what we learns in Drantz, all the good stuff you're about to hear is also brought to you by the fine folks at Kintech, who gave Jason those amazing orthotics.
This hour of Halford and Brough is brought to you by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics. You were correct on that, Halford. Do your feet hurt?
No.
Well, mine did, so I went to Kintech, and they helped me out. Talk to a fitting expert today.
They're fine.
At 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net.
This is like when you sabotaged my intercity read yesterday, where I'm like, throw away your Thanksgiving leftovers and buy more food. And you're like, well, I'm going to have a Thanksgiving turkey sandwich left over for today.
Well, of course your feet don't hurt. You never leave the couch.
It's true. When you don't put any pressure on them, they never hurt. Okay. Let's go to Thomas Drantz now. Not only of the Athletic Vancouver, but also now a card-carrying member of Sportsnet 650. What up, Drantzer?
Is my card in the mail? I'm looking forward to it. Thank you, gentlemen. Excited to be joining, what, the family, the team, Sports 650? Really looking forward to launching the show next week.
I see what you did there.
I see what you did
the
there.
The card maker machine is not working right now, so
okay.
So unfortunately we'll have to just, we'll text you something, though.
We also can't afford stamps.
Right.
So we will have to bring that to you by hand. Other than that, welcome to the family. Before we get into the Canucks game tonight, tell the listeners that might not know about this new endeavor that you and Jamie Dodd are going to take on. It's a daily Canucks show right here on Sportsnet 650, right after the Jeff Merrick show. Let them know what it's all about.
Yeah, so I'll be, along with Jamie Dodd, who I'm really excited to work with, you will be the anchor leg of the morning coverage Monday to Friday at 6:50. You guys will obviously get us started, kick it off to Merrick, and then we'll do an hour. And it's going to be a really interesting show because I'm going to be traveling around. Like next week when we launch the show, I'll do an episode from Buffalo. I'll do actually two episodes from Buffalo, an episode from Detroit, and two from Chicago. And that's going to be typical because I'm still going to be on the road. I'm still going to be at the rink for practice. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very different type of radio show. Like, it's going to be hyper-present, very fast, everything you need to know about the Canucks, laser-focused on the daily. And I'm really excited to try something a little bit different with that space. And I'm really excited to be on the radio and on the same team as you, gentlemen. You know, it's great. Like, it's going to be a ton of fun. Can't wait to serve this market in that capacity.
Yeah, I agree. It's awesome that we're got the band back together of sorts, and we're all working at the same spot, which is great. And this is very befitting because you're in Edmonton right now, so you're doing a hit from the road. It's the Oilers and the Canucks tonight from Edmonton, and we've done a lot of the game day stuff leading up to this because we wanted to get into it with you. So there are some things that are still, I suppose, up in the air. We're going on the assumption that Brock Besser, although eligible to play tonight, won't play tonight. Is that your same gut feeling on this one?
Yeah, I mean, it is, for sure. If he's on the ice for morning skate, you know, that would be par for the course for a team that always has something interesting going on, right? I mean, this Canucks team is a ceaseless sort of fountain of drama and intrigue. So if Besser's on the ice, you know, that'll be fascinating. And it'll be fascinating in part because once McEwen clears waivers here in a couple of hours, right, and Alex Chiasson's contract is formally registered. Like, I know the team said it was signed yesterday, but it's not. Like, they've agreed to terms. The deal will be done today once there's space to put him on the roster. So if they're to activate Besser, if Besser's on the ice for morning skate, like, the immediate talk radio talking point becomes, well, who are they waiving, Rathbone or Pod Colson? And, like, come on, boys, we can do hours on that, right? But that's the only way to get a guy who, you know, off the roster to create the space needed to activate Besser if he's ready to play. And of course, if a player of Besser's caliber is ready to play, you do whatever you've got to do to get him in the lineup. So yeah, it'll be interesting if Besser's on the ice for morning skate. I suspect you're right. I suspect he won't play in game one. I thought that was basically locked in once I saw who was on waivers and who wasn't, frankly, on Sunday. And yeah, that's my expectation at this point. And then we'll see where they go from there. It looks like an Alex Chiasson second line. That's a big spot for the PTO winger. And we'll see if they can score enough, especially against an Oilers team that could dent them on the power play.
Drancer, just to clarify that, obviously Podkolzin and Rathbone wouldn't need waivers. They would just be sent to... What could they not do it by waiving Nick Petan?
Well, no, because you can't... Yeah, he has to clear before he can be reassigned.
Right.
And he wouldn't clear until 11 a.m. Pacific time on Thursday, which, you know, 12 hours after the game ends. So, they'd be locked in to creating space by sending down an ELC guy or a waiver-exempt guy. You know it's not going to be Hoglander, right?
Yeah.
But if so it would be.
It would probably
be
Rathbone, though. What wouldn't it be? Because he was on the fourth pair at practice, which leads me to my next question. How do the Canucks defend McDavid and Draisaitl, who might be on the same line tonight for the Edmonton Oilers? Now, the answer to that is with difficulty, but like which players are going to get the assignments? I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Travis Green, there's so many new players. We don't know how he's going to attack the teams like Edmonton that have these elite talents.
No, you're right. Well, and McDavid is such a different beast because he is, do you remember Event Horizon? Like, do you remember the Sam Neill movie Event Horizon where you fold the piece of paper and just like poke a hole through it? And it's like, that's the quickest way between point A and point B, right? Like that's what McDavid is on the ice. Like that's what McDavid is in real time. And, you know, we know that the Canucks would probably in preference use Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Tyler Myers as your shutdown pair, right? Typically on your average game, I think that would be the pair that sees top line competition. But if McDavid is that top line competition, I mean, how tempted is this coaching staff going to be to use their fastest defenseman, which would be the Hughes-Tucker-Pullman pair, to be that tough matchups group, right? I mean, that's my expectation, frankly, right, is that you'll see a lot of Hughes against McDavid. It's something we've seen before. The very first game, actually, right before Christmas of 2019, it was a simpler time, that Hughes really got toughs was against the Oilers for a home win. You know, and that sort of kicked off Hughes and Tanev playing more frequently as a tough minutes pair that year. But yeah, I mean, I won't be shocked at all if we see Hughes Pullman sort of get that primary assignment. And then up front, I mean, it's got to be Horvat, right? Like it's got to be that Pearson Horvat Garland line that'll be drawing in against McDavid, especially because, you know, further down the lineup, you're looking like Dickinson, Highmore, Hoglander. Like, that doesn't sound good against McDavid, Draisaitl, or Pettersson, Miller, and Chiasson. And it's like, you know, a top six line, they're going to face some minutes head-to-head against McDavid, inevitably, if you're going to get them up to where you want them to be. But, you know, I don't think you're going to want them hopping over the boards necessarily right away the moment you see McDavid hit the ice. So, you know, I'd expect Horvat, and I'd expect a steady diet of Hughes to be battling up against 97 and, you know, his other Hart Trophy winning running mate.
Is Horvat a good match for Connor Garland?
I think so. We didn't see the best of Connor Garland in preseason. He admitted that, not realizing that when you do that in this market, it's just something that we talk about for like 10 days.
He admitted it. Get him.
He's not even playing up to his standard.
you dummy, that's why you lie.
Yeah, no, that is totally like, you know, 6 months from now, right? He'll be an experienced pro. He'll be like doing the like spin like Henrik thing, right? Like, no, I thought we played well. And it's like, you lost 7-0.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but the problem
we had a good start, though. Some good moments. Some really good moments out there.
Yeah, we're close. We're close to figuring it out. Anyway, Garland, you know, I have no concerns about Connor Garland. I really don't. I mean, he has talked a little bit about trying to figure out systems, about trying to figure out predictability. You know, I think he hasn't exactly come out and had chemistry right off the bat with any Canucks wingers. But good thing about Horvat and Pearson is, you know, they're kind of going to play in straight lines, right? I don't think there's a ton of adjustment needed, at least on the offensive side of the puck, to play with them. And at the end of the day, we've seen over two seasons, you know, and over 100 games, Garland be a true top-line rate scorer in this league, and not as a result of favorable bounces or unsustainable percentages, but just as a result of the way that he gets inside and generates scoring chances and plays with, you know, an unholy level of intensity. You know, the moment games count, I expect we're going to see that side of this guy tonight. And, you know, on my list of preseason concerns for the Canucks, like, you have to get pretty far down before you get to Connor Garland not being really good, because he is.
I had a bit of a chuckle after the final preseason game when Travis Green said, we got to find some lines. I was like, you guys had seven preseason games, but obviously I get it because they were missing so many people. They've got so many new faces that seven games wasn't enough. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, the Lotto line was never together during the preseason because either Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson weren't signed or Brock Besser was hurt.
Well, and JT Miller was playing center. And, you know, it's a funny thing, too, because it's like seven games should be enough, but seven games when you're missing a ton of bodies is actually far too much, right? Because you get into this moment where, for example, are you going to play anyone 3 and 5 to end the preseason, right?
Yeah.
No, I mean, of course you're not. And so, you know, there was this sort of juggling act in terms of who was playing when. And, you know, we ended up seeing some odd things. Like, we ended up seeing Carson Fox play like 3 games and Jack Rathbone playing all 7. You know, and I do think now we look back at it, and I do wonder, especially with Rathbone having been on the 4th pair, i.e. projected to be out of the lineup based on how the club has practiced the past couple of days, like, you know, this could be the Adam Gaudette plan. This could be the brought along slowly, you know, not necessarily in the everyday lineup, but on the NHL team for the first month or to 6 weeks of the season. And then, you know, they're sort of counting on him being a big piece that they can ride when the meat of the season gets going later this winter, right? I mean, playing him in 7 games in the preseason, it was tough to read, like, what exactly are they looking at here? Obviously, he did make the team, but I do think that also they were probably trying to get him as many reps as they could before he became less than a regular to begin the season. And in the event that he doesn't play today, I think that's sort of what that will point to. You know, with the Lotto line, like with Miller and Pettersson, at least, I mean, you're not worried about them for me because they've played, you know, like the vast majority of Elias Pettersson's 5-on-5 ice time has come with JT Miller, something like 85% over the last 2 years. We're talking about almost 2,000 minutes. And in those 2,000 minutes, right, the Canucks have outscored the opposition by 27. This is a team that gets outscored pretty significantly over the last 2 years. But with those two on the ice, you know, it's a totally different environment for the club. So Lotto line fully intact or not, and I don't expect we'll see it tonight, although there is a chance, you know, at least with those two, it's sort of a break glass in case of emergency. You don't have to worry too much about them having chemistry. And I think it's going to be the exact same when Besser comes back, right? Like those Pettersson and Besser, Miller and Besser, the three of them together, those guys have played so much that that's one of the groups I don't think you worry too much about, like, finding momentum with. You know, Highmore, Hoglund, or Dickinson, on the other hand, like, have any of those guys ever played a game together?
I would not have predicted that line when I was making my preseason lines. Like, let's put these three very different players together.
I know. Well, and they really didn't play much at all. Like, Dickinson was glued to DiGiuseppe throughout preseason. You know, DiGiuseppe for me is probably a better offensive player than Matthew Highmore and does many of the same things defensively. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. Matthew Highmore in the top nine is probably the surprise coming out of training camp and preseason for me.
Drancer, who is in charge of the penalty kill this season, and how much work have they been putting into that?
Yeah, it's Nolan Baumgartner again. So the basic breakdown of responsibilities behind the Canucks bench is Jason King's running the power play, and Nolan Baumgartner will run the PK and the defense. Bradshaw's an associate, right? Like a sort of an associate coach role, even though he doesn't have the associate coach title. So he's sort of without a portfolio or a specific portfolio, but he's involved in everything. And then you've got Travis, who will obviously run the forwards on the bench and handle the media jackals post game. So the, you know, penalty kill has done a fair bit of work, but you know, their personnel only appeared to be set like the other day. You know, I think we're going to see an awful lot of Juho Lamico, for example, who wasn't even on this team until a trade over the weekend, like until a Monday trade. So, you know, they've done some work. They did a lot of work in practice yesterday that we saw, like a lot of work, especially with the forwards who are newer, you know, on sort of how to rotate when the puck is moving around up high in a 1-3-1. They had four assistant coaches, you know, Ian Clark in the bumper spot, sort of mimicking 1-3-1 movements as the forwards just kind of adjusted to it. They did that for 20 minutes, maybe half hour before practice. It's a lot of work on structure, right? So yeah, I mean, they've definitely put in that work, and you know, now we're going to see exactly how they line up. But looks like it's going to be Lamico, looks like it's going to be Highmore, looks like it's going to be Dickinson, and then a trio of actual top six forwards who might come in for spells here and there in Tanner Pearson, JT Miller, and Bo Horvat. And the guy who's the best of that group, 4-on-5, by a fair bit, is JT Miller. And I think he's the guy who it's most important to make sure he's not playing too many of those minutes, yeah. Right? Like, if you need a key draw one, sure. But short of that, you know, got to be quick changes. Because if Miller's up over 20, 21 minutes, like, you're going to see some of those giveaways. And you're not going to see a player who's going to be able, at least, you know, maybe you'll see it tonight, maybe you'll see it for a game here and there, but you're not going to see a player who can sustain, you know, the type of heavy driving game that this club really needs him to play. Like, they really need to keep him at 18, 19 minutes max on a regular basis this season.
I know we're getting into the weeds here, but it continues.
That's what we do.
I know. It continues to confuse me as to why Bo Horvat has not learned how to be a good penalty killer. What do you have a theory on that?
I don't. I honestly don't.
He
should be. And while he is more of an off, like, I guess here's the thing for me. Bo Horvat to me is like a conventional second line offensive center, not the defensive center that people sort of bill him as because he wins draws.
Yeah, people bill him as like Phil Deneau. I'm like, he's not Phil Deneau.
No, he's not. And that's okay. Like, he's more like Braden Schenn, right? Like, that's sort of the on the kaleidoscope of NHL centerman options. He's closer to Braden Schenn than he is to Phil Deneau, which is to say a really, really good player. It's just his calibration is a little bit more offensive. But it's like, you know how squirrels have that bushy tail? Right? Like, Bo Horvat's faceoff percentage is like a squirrel's bushy tail. It's like, oh, that's a squirrel. It's like, yeah, but it's really a rodent with PR, right? Like, he's an offensive center who wins draws. So people are like, he's a defensive center. He's a defensive ace. And it's like, no, he's not. That's okay. He's still really good. And so, you know, I kind of think it's probably just related to that. Like, at the end of the day, this is a guy who's become a power play ace. He's, you know, one of the smartest bumper guys in the league. And that's a part of the game that he's mastered and provides sneaky value in. And yet when it comes to the penalty kill, I just think whether it's rotations, maybe it's a confidence thing. Maybe he's second guessing himself. You know, I don't really have an answer for it. And anytime I've tried to bring it up to him, you know, he thinks he should be a good penalty killer, and he's right. You know, like, he's way too smart and way too reliable as a two-way player all around to not be good in that spot. And yet every time he's been on, the on-ice results don't lie. Like, they're not just like he's not a good option there. Like, they're really bad, right? Like, the results have been really bad consistently. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a mystery to me too, Jason. Like, honestly, one of the big mysteries about covering this team the last 5-6 years, or the biggest mystery about this core for me, is why hasn't, you know, a really bright, really smart, really hardworking, really reliable two-way piece become, you know, a passable, like, average penalty killer over the course of his NHL career? I don't know.
So we've had an Event Horizon reference, which was a very deep cut. We've had Bo Horvat compared to a squirrel, which I've never heard before. My final question, I want to put you on the record because it's game one tonight. How are you feeling overall about this Canucks team?
I'd say I'm cautiously pessimistic, to be totally honest with you.
Cautiously pessimistic. There's a new one.
Yeah. Cautiously pessimistic. I don't like to be, me and my, stats and my predictive metrics, right? And I don't like to declare what a team is until I've seen them play like an embarrassing run of games, right? Like the 30 game mark tends to be when I drop a column that basically says like this team is a playoff team or isn't a playoff team. I do it every year. I do it with interviews, with an interview with the coach, usually a one-on-one, and I just explain where this team is and what they are. And until then, I tend to be, not flying blind, but relying on a lot less certainty in making my predictions. But when I look through this team, I see a lot of top-end talent. I see a power play that I think is going to score. I see a starting goaltender who's, going to take on his first year as a workhorse, but could carry this team, absolutely, right? For me, the biggest X factor, the biggest reason I'm cautiously pessimistic, is that I believe in Thatcher Demko. And if Thatcher Demko is really good, we all know, what a great equalizer a hot goaltender can be. Mm-hmm. And I think Demko will be really good. So goaltending, offense, power play, those are the strengths that I see. I'm really concerned about the penalty kill. I'm extremely concerned about the right side of that defensive group. I'm extremely concerned about the overall two-way intelligence of the blue line group as a whole. And, I fundamentally look down that side of the lineup and I just think, this it's really hard to make the NHL playoffs with a defense that can't, help you control the flow of games 5-on-5. And that's where I think the Canucks are going to really struggle. I think there's nights where they may be overmatched at even strength, and that creates a tremendous burden on your, top end talent to score and on your goaltender to clean everything up and keep things clean in front of you. And, we've seen it work before. It worked when Markstrom was Vezina caliber in 2019-20, but leaning on that, leaning on that type of goaltending, that's succeeding on a knife's edge in the NHL. And, as a guy who lives and dies with probability, right, who sees things as a range of outcomes, of possible outcomes, and tries to project things, as accurately and as honestly as I can within a range of possibilities, that's always a method for success that makes me deeply uncomfortable, right, that strikes me as unsustainable. And that's sort of where I see the Canucks as being at, is – on the playoff bubble with some obvious strengths and some obvious flaws. And for me, those flaws are, front of mind, especially after an offseason but a training camp in which, they've lost a couple right D. We don't really have clarity there. We suspect they'll need to make upgrades down the line. All of that has created a cautious pessimism for me as I approach this team and covering them this year.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said there. That's kind of exactly the way I see this team. There's a lot to be excited about, and I mean, I'm talking about like the power play and the fact that they're scoring on the top three lines, and you like Thatcher Demko, and I like Jaro Halak, even if he's getting a little bit older. I think he'll should be a good backup goalie. You got to keep the puck out of your own net, though, and the goalie can't do it all, and I just don't know if the Canucks are built to defend.
And it all begins tonight. Your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650, 7 o'clock puck drop, Canucks in Edmonton to take on the Oilers. Drancer, it all begins for you on Monday. That will be the debut episode with you and Jamie. So enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy everything over the weekend. Best of luck in your first show, and we will do this again next week. I should let the listeners know that Drance will still be an integral part of the Halford and Brough show.
Yeah, I'll still be kicking around. I'm really looking forward to that, too. I think I demanded it. I was like, I still want to be Halford and Brough's, idiot uncle who shows up every week and just, talks while people look at their watches and hope the conversation ends.
You know Drance and his demands.
We go and get coffee.
Thanks, boys. Be
okay,
well.
Okay, bud. That's Thomas Drance here from the Athletic Vancouver and now part of Sportsnet 650.
Right? Bo Horvat's face-off percentage is like a squirrel's bushy tail. It's like, oh, that's a squirrel. It's like, yeah, but it's really a rodent with PR, right? Like,
very well played.
Event Horizon. He was like, remember that movie, Event Horizon? And I was kind of like, not really.
I had to look it up. I'm like, what are you, Lawrence Fishburne's in the movie. Lead with Lawrence Fishburne at the very least.
Was that a space movie or an underwater movie?
Space movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Was it Deep Horizon? That was the
Event Horizon was like super gory, wasn't it? Yeah, I remember. I kind of remember it. Don't really want to talk about it anymore. We got to do.
You're thinking of Deepwater Horizon.
Yeah, that's a different
Deepwater Horizon. Yeah,
you said Deep Horizon,
Deep Horizon, or whatever.
That sounds like a porno. Okay, we got to go to break. We'll be back with some What We Learned.
That's actually Ran Deeps.
Alfred Bruff, Sportsnet 650.